From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Illinois could be the leader in clean transportation in the U.S. thanks to the Reimagining Electric Vehicles Act signed into law Tuesday morning.
Not only can we lead in the fight against climate change, we can also create thousands of jobs for hardworking Illinoisans.
The Secretary of State is visited by more Illinois residents than any other in state government. However, the office has become inefficient with long lines, outdated technology, and inefficient processes.
I can't pass legislation single-handedly. I have to earn the vote of my fellow legislators, where a judge is one person making a ruling. So just the thought of someone being able to be so easily persuaded is scary.
This is another effort to change the rules of the game because they don't like the outcome, and the voters of the state of Illinois are noticing that the elected officials that they've put in power have not served them well.
That's Democratic House member Katie Stewart and Republican lawmaker Ryan Spain. Governor Pritzker took action this week on some legislation. One of those was to target what's known as dark money in judicial campaigns. Governor also signing electric vehicle industry incentives as well. We also heard there from the longtime Republican House member Dan Brady. He's running for Secretary of State. Several Democrats have already announced as well. We'll discuss the campaign ahead. That and more on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, we have Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor, and joining us today, Brendan Moore. He covers state government for Lee Enterprises. Brendan, thanks for being with us once again.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, Hannah, let me go to you first. I mentioned the governor signing legislation that would restrict some money coming into judicial campaigns. So explain what this would do.
All right. So this bill was pushed through by Democrats during veto session as, you know, another omnibus elections bill, I think maybe the second we've seen this year. And what it would do would be say, no, you can't have folks giving from out of state to judicial campaigns, and also limit what's known as dark money, which is money that comes from nonprofits, 501c4s, fives and sixes, that folks can give to, but the, you know, no one would know, be able to know that they're giving. And so it's kind of in that way washed of the identity. And so there's been a growing number of academics and folks in the legal community who have been particularly concerned about the effects of dark money in judicial races. And but of course, you know, as we heard at the top there, Republicans, cynically not on board with this, for a variety of reasons on that whole omnibus bill, but in particular, because we just saw in November of 2020, a year ago, Tom Kilbride, the former Illinois Supreme Court justice, he was the first sitting justice in Illinois history to lose his retention bid. And of course, Democrats earlier this year remapped the state Supreme Court districts for the first time in like 60 years. And then this happens. And so Ryan and other Republicans' contention is, hey, Democrats are trying to, you know, push around the edges to make sure that they don't lose control of the court, because, partisan control of the state Supreme Court is what has, you know, for example, in this redistricting fight that we've been talking about all year, you know, it's a 2016 decision by the court that was a kind of a partisan split, didn't allow for an independent redistricting question to go before voters on the ballot that would have changed the way that districts are drawn. And that's what, Jim Nallen, who is the former, longtime player in Illinois politics, conservative, says it animated him to kind of coalesce this whole thing. He started this dark money group and, related political action committee to take out, Justice last year. And then he's doing this whole activism campaign on judicial elections, not just the Supreme Court, but everywhere. And so it's all related. And, you know, there's a lot at stake here when we think about what the control of the court has meant for Democrats in the last, I mean, for a long time, but definitely in the last decade.
Yeah, Charlie, Republicans unlikely to win control of the legislature. It'll be a tough fight to win the governor's office next year. But the Supreme Court, that's definitely in play.
Yeah, I think it is. And it's interesting because the focus was on the dark money, which during floor debate, Representative Stewart referred to as out-of-state untraceable money. And we mentioned the Kilbride retention vote. Ironically, the biggest chunk of money that went to the shadow group, this that led the fight against Kilbride, in what I thought was some very, what would you say, questionable advertising. They portrayed Kilbride as basically being Mike Madigan's puppet, and the idea was, if you don't like Mike Madigan, vote against Kilbride, which worked. But the Judicial Fairness Project, which was the leading dark money group, their financial contribution to the effort to get rid of Kilbride was really dwarfed by money that came from Ken Griffin, who's the state's richest individual. And he kicked in something like $4.5 million. But it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward, because as Hannah mentioned, one of the things the legislature also did was redraw the districts. Now, the district that Kilbride used to represent ran basically from Chicago, or the Chicago south suburbs, like in Will County and Kankakee County, and ran all the way across the state to the Quad Cities. There are five districts. Cook County itself is one district. It elects three justices, and there are four other districts that each elect one to give us our seven judges. Well, under the old map, there's a good chance Republicans would pick up four of those. So the Democrats redrew it, created a new district, well, several new districts, reconfigured districts, I guess is a better way. They took it and made the northern and western suburbs of Chicago, with the exception of DuPage County, they put them into its own district, a new district, the second district, which is probably likely to elect the Democrats, so they'd still maintain their majority. They also shortened the length of the district that Kilbride used to represent, and then they carved up the rest of the state into two humongous districts, one of which runs roughly from St. Louis all the way up to the Wisconsin border, and another one that runs roughly from Champaign County all the way down to the Ohio River. Those two districts are certainly likely to elect a Republican. Cook County will elect three Democrats. The new North Suburban District, the new second district, is likely to elect a Democrat. The third one may very well be in play. So depending on who the candidates wind up, depending on what the turnout is, what kind of a ground game there is, how much money is put into these races, Republicans have an outside shot at taking control of the court. And Democrats have a shot at having a 5-2 majority. And as was indicated, what the court decides is really very important. Now, the one issue that you get a lot of talk about from the, what would you say, the conservative groups, the anti-union groups, is that we have these pensions for public workers, for teachers, and university employees like myself and like Sean and Hannah. And so we should change that provision in the Constitution that says you can't change pension benefits. When that went before the court, it was legislation to do that. It was shot down by the court 7-0. So it doesn't matter which party controls there, the pension clause is going to stay in the Constitution. On the other hand, stuff like whether there should be damages for pain and suffering and personal injury suits, that's been thrown out three times by the high court, votes of 4-3, four Democrats against limiting those things. having a partisan majority, particularly in this day and age with the heightened polarization, would be very advantageous to the business community.
And I want to move on, but Hannah, real quick before I do, it's not just Republicans and conservatives who have amped up their giving in judicial campaigns. We've seen trial lawyers doing this as well. I mean, this is this dark money is not a one-sided situation, is it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, trial lawyers are a huge funder of Democrats in this state, and they have won a lot of important victories, you know, especially those appellate victories that make, you know, set case law. And, you know, those are some of the reasons that business groups, for example, cite that, you know, they have a hard time recruiting businesses to Illinois or getting them to stay in Illinois because of things like, for example, workers' comp. When I was writing about this earlier this week, I found this research paper from several years back now, but it was a look at how dark money has affected judicial decisions, at least in this one researcher's estimation, a professor from Emory University. And, you know, she looked at 2 years of decisions, you know, across the Supreme Courts. Of course, not every Supreme Court in the U.S. is elected like ours is in Illinois, but she compared, you know, contributions from various groups and their the outcomes of court decisions on business-related matters. And what she had found was that Democrats are more likely to be swayed. Of course, Republican justices elected as Republicans are probably more predisposed to side with businesses in the first place. But, you know, she found that business giving was more likely to influence those outcomes, or at least, again, in her estimation. But you're right. You know, that's, you have to also weigh that against the longtime influence of trial lawyers and, you know, public employee unions, definitely.
In Illinois, there's been a growing trend in spending more money. At one point, and this would have been in 2004, $9.5 million was spent between the candidates running for the Supreme Court seat from far southern Illinois. And the Democrat got money from the trial lawyers, got many from unions. The Republican got money from business community, medical society, and the Republican, Lord Carmier, who's retiring, was elected. And the whole issue had to do with tort reform, but that was never mentioned in the campaigns. It was all one guy was favored sex abusers, the other guy favored child pornographers. I mean, it was just down and dirty and nasty, never got into the policy. And that was the all-time record for spending on a Supreme Court race in the United States of America, $9.5 million. So last November, on the retention issue for Kilbride, $11.7 million was spent by the pro-Kilbride people and the anti-Kilbride people. Again, that's a national record, the most ever on a retention.
Well, the governor was busy this week. He also signed a much ballyhooed piece of legislation to help the up-and-coming electric vehicle industry. Brendan Moore with us. And Brendan, you covered this. You've been following this issue. What would this piece of legislation do when it comes to trying to help the state of Illinois become more of a home for those type of vehicles?
Right, Sean. As you said, the governor signed what's been called the REV Act earlier this week. That's the Reimagining Electric Vehicles in Illinois Act. Basically, you can sum it up as a stimulus package for the electric vehicle industry. So suppliers and producers, big companies, you know, like Rivian or Tesla, but also smaller, you know, battery companies and parts suppliers that build out the supply chain. It's an essentially enhanced version of the state's EDGE payroll tax credit. So basically, companies would be eligible for a state income tax credit of 75% or 100% of payroll taxes withheld from each new employee that they add for up to 15 years. The greater percentage would be if the company locates in an underserved area. And then there are also some provisions like that would exempt, there would be income tax credits for the wages of construction workers, sales tax exemption for building materials, tax credit for training workers. So basically, it's meant to offer an extra incentive for electric vehicle companies maybe thinking about locating in Illinois. This really came up over the summer because the electric vehicle industry is really kind of almost taken off overnight, in the sense that you have a lot of these companies that are making decisions in the next few months that where they're going to be locating. And a lot of people think this is really the next frontier in terms of auto production. And so the state didn't want to be left behind. And if you talk to bill advocates, you know, Governor Pritzker or you know, some of the lawmakers in the House that shepherded this through, they'll say that the state's not offering the most of any state. There are some states that are basically just offering cash for companies to locate, but they firmly believe that Illinois is uniquely positioned given its place in the middle of the country, status as a transportation hub, its workforce, a lot of strategic advantages. And they believe that this is just a little extra sweetener. Obviously, there's kind of a model for this. There's proof that some of these credits can be successful. In 2017, Rivian decided to locate their North American production facility in Normal, an old Mitsubishi plant, and they utilized some of the EDGE tax credits. I believe the initial deal was maybe up to $50 million, and to create 1,000 jobs over, I think it was like a period of 10 years, something like that. Well, Rivian today employs about 3,400 people, and they're probably going to be close to 4,000, you know, within the next few months. I mean, they just went public. They had a valuation, I believe, like $77 billion when in their IPO. So it's really big business, and I think that, and I should also mention that there are different levels of tax credits here for get the big companies like Rivian, the ones that grab the headlines, but also smaller companies to build out the supply chain. That's viewed as a really crucial aspect. You know, because you have companies like Rivian that don't necessarily want to have to get, you know, their batteries or their parts from, you know, a company in, you know, all across the world. They want, you know, to have a local supply chain. So, and obviously Illinois, not only did they pass this EV legislation, but obviously they passed the landmark climate legislation, which Governor Pritzker signed in September, that has provisions in there for electric vehicles, including a rebate for people who might be interested in buying an electric vehicle. There's a goal of getting up to 1 million electric vehicles on the road in Illinois by 2030. And then obviously in the bipartisan infrastructure law that was signed last week, there's, I believe, about $149 million to build out charging stations in Illinois. And there's opportunities for more to get more through grants. So this is really becoming a huge booming industry in this country. And there are people that believe that Illinois could be the Silicon Valley of EVs.
Yeah, Charlie, tax credits, they're different than just flat out giving money and some of the other breaks that people get. This is sort of a proof in the pudding, I guess you would say. Is this the better way to go in your mind when it comes to a state trying to attract business?
Well, I don't know if it's the best way to go, but it's something that most states do, and we've been doing it for, 40 years or more. And I know at one point when the Japanese auto manufacturers started locating plants over here, various states would try and outdo themselves to provide tax credits. And we landed the Mitsubishi plant in Normal, but other Japanese manufacturers, one that we were after was, I think it was Saturn model was going to be built that went to Tennessee or somewhere. And I saw a story a couple years after this where the Japanese auto manufacturers were saying, well, we really appreciate getting these tax breaks. And we like to see the states vying among themselves to what they're going to give us. But the bottom line is we're not going to put two plants in the same state. because we want broader distribution to have more impact on the national politics. If we have a plant in one state, we have two senators who have to be looking out for us. If we have them in five states, we have 10 senators, U.S. senators. And so it struck me that it was kind of a clever gimmick on the part of the Japanese to keep trying for these benefits and to get groups to outbid themselves, when in fact they had no intention of going anywhere. But as I say, it's something that's going on. You kind of got to do it. And if all goes well, this new plan that we've unveiled, that Brendan was describing, will help bring probably not another electric vehicle manufacturer to Central Illinois. But what we're looking for is maybe to get Samsung to come to Central Illinois, maybe, I've heard it suggested, right across the street from Rivian, to build one of these electric vehicle battery facilities. And so, as was said, people are hoping that we might become the Silicon Valley of electric vehicles. We'll have to see how it plays out.
A little political talk. As we mentioned at the start of the show, Dan Brady, been in the State House for about 20 years. He has announced he is running for Secretary of State, the first Republican, maybe the only one who will announce for that. He's been, as I mentioned, a longtime member of the Illinois House. He represents an area, Bloomington Normal, Brendan, that you do cover. And your thoughts on Dan Brady getting into this race? Not a surprise. This has been talked about for several months now.
Right. Dan Brady has been hinting at this for a while, at least since the summer. So yesterday's announcement was expected. But as you mentioned, Sean, he has been in the Illinois House since 2001. He's actually the third most senior member of the House now. So he's been there a long time. He's the deputy minority leader under Jim Durkin. And before that, he was the McLean County coroner for 8 years, and he is a funeral home director by trade. Brady, when he kind of included this in his announcement, but what the issues he's going to run on is how the Secretary of State's office is really an office of constituent services. You know, it's where you get your driver's licenses, deals with issues of organ donation, and a whole host of other issues. And he is essentially going to try and make the argument that, you know, I dealt with these issues when I was coroner. I dealt with a lot of these issues when I was in the legislature. He's probably going to do the Jesse White thing and say, I'm not going to run for another office. This is what I want to do. That probably can't be said for some of the Democrats that are running on the other side. And he's going to try and thread the needle and win a statewide office, which Republicans haven't done since Governor Rauner and former Comptroller G. Bartopinko won in 2014. And he might have an opportunity to do so. He's conservative, but he's more in the traditional mold of the older Illinois Republican Party, you know, your Jim Edgars and your Jim Thompsons. He's not a firebrand, but I think that kind of works to his advantage in a sense. I think his challenges obviously are he's a downstate Republican. Illinois is a very blue state. He's going to have to raise some money, and it kind of goes to, you know, will a Ken Griffin or some of these other big donors choose to help him in his campaign? And then what will the national climate look like next year? Will it allow for, you know, a Republican to be competitive in a statewide race in Illinois? But Brady thinks that there's an opportunity, and, you know, he's leaving a pretty safe seat. I mean, Republicans didn't do very well in redistricting, but Brady was drawn into a safe Republican seat. He could have ran for reelection, but he's taken a shot for Secretary of State.
All right. And of course, as was mentioned there are four Democrats who at least at this time have announced that they do plan to seek that office and replace Jesse White. Let's go to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, we were talking about Dan Brady and how he's not pledged, as Jesse White did, that he's not going to run for anything else at some point in the future. Well, it's interesting because if you go back half a century, every Secretary of State since the election in 1972 has run for something else. Mike Hollett ran and lost for governor in 76. Alan Dixon ran and was elected to the U.S. Senate in 1980. Jim Egger in 1990 was elected governor. George Ryan in 1998 was elected governor. Jesse White, who was also elected in 98, said, I'm not going to run for anything else. And by gosh, he hasn't. And as a matter of fact, when he completes his term in January of 2023, he will have served the most time ever of anybody in Illinois history as Secretary of State.
Brendan?
Yeah, also kind of going off the news from Dan Brady, it kind of created a trickle-down effect. So State Representative Dan Calkins announced that he's going to run in the district that Brady lives in. Calkins lives just outside the district. He got drawn out of his district in the remap. In under Illinois law, you can run in a district that has any part of your old district, but you have to move into that district eventually. He'll have to do that. So you're kind of starting to see the musical chairs of, stuff is starting to kind of fall into place. You also had State Senator Steve McClure announce his reelection in a new district a couple of weeks ago. Senator Sally Turner is going to announce on Monday, from what I understand. And Senator Neil Anderson is going to run in a rural district up near the Quad Cities. So even though Republicans were not happy with the map, they're starting to accept the reality that they're going to have to run in some of these districts, and some of them might be pretty new terrain.
Okay. And Hannah?
Well, this week, the State Board of Elections cleared, at least for now, Auditor General Frank Martino, who, of course, was the longtime Democratic state legislator from Spring Valley and like his father before him. The case was related to illegal campaign spending, about $250,000 over a 17-year period before he became Auditor General. The case went back and forth from the Board of Elections to various appellate courts, the Illinois Supreme Court, who in May said, yes, this was illegal spending when you, instead of, did mileage reimbursements for yourself and campaign workers, for your campaigns, for their personal vehicles. He had a line of credit at this service station in his hometown for fuel and a lot of vehicle repairs. It's just a really interesting case that I feel like says a lot about campaign finance in Illinois and, where the failures of oversight are and, the realities of campaigns. And I think it's been really interesting to watch, especially as the folks who had long called for his resignation in the first years of this six-year saga, they've now faded from Illinois politics. So he kind of outlasted the scandal.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week, and our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Brendan Moore. He covers state government for Lee Enterprises. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org, the NPR One app, or through iTunes, and join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.